What's going on, Orlando City fans? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Rushnell, and today I have a special guest joining me on the podcast. Elliot Holman is here today from the MLS UK show. Elliot, how are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's been a great last couple of weeks watching Orlando City. I'm a huge fan of the MLS UK show, as many of my listeners are, so I really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
No worries. Likewise, always listening to your podcast when I'm on my way to work, often after a game when we're maybe not feeling quite as positive as we are at the minute.
Yeah, it's been a rough couple of years as an Orlando City fan, but I appreciate you tuning in. So I wanted to do something really quickly. If you are unaware, if you're not a listener of the MLS UK show, Elliot does this this little game with his co-host, Henry. Called The Game with the Changing Name, and I actually wanted to turn it over to you, Elliot,
make
you have to come up with one. So do you want to explain what it is really quickly?
Yeah, of course. So being a fan from the UK, it's been quite interesting over the last few years to look at which players have played both over here in the UK and then moved over to play in MLS. So I tend to give some clues of the career path of a player who has played here, but also over in the States or Canada in MLS. Listeners have to guess who they think it is.
All right. Well, I figured I'd give you a pretty easy one. So this player started his career at Lincoln City. Okay. 20 appearances, 5 goals, 1993 was his first season. Moved to Newcastle, where he barely played. Moved to Millwall on loan, and then moved to Coventry City in 1996, played 94 times, scoring 28 goals. He then played for Leeds in 1999, moved to Manchester City a year later, appeared 69 times for them, scoring 22 goals. He then went out on loan to Nottingham Forest in 2003, then to Norwich City in 2003, which I know you're a fan of Norwich City. He then played for Norwich City for 5 years, from 2003 to 2008, making...
Did he go to San Jose by any chance?
Yes, he did. 174 appearances for Norwich City, 36 goals, and then he went to the San Jose Earthquakes, appearing 28 times, scoring 9 goals in the 2008-2009 season. So, if you guys know, all you have to do is send either Elliot or me a DM. You don't win anything other than praise for getting it correct. He had a long career path in England and then moved over and retired at the San Jose Earthquakes in 2008-2009. So after that, I wanted to just talk about you for a second. Living in England your whole life, I presume, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah. How did you become an Orlando City fan? I know you, I'm sure you get that question a lot, being overseas, and MLS isn't the most popular market over there. So how did you get into the sport, and how did you get into Orlando City?
Well, it is a common question, and there's two sides, there's two questions that I get. One is, how did you get into MLS? And then the second is, of all the teams, why Orlando? Like, why would you want to suffer? But the truth is, when my dad retired, he was a head teacher of two schools in Norwich. He retired and he bought a property just about half an hour from downtown Orlando. And I'd never been when he bought the property. I'd been to California and Nevada a few other states, but I'd never been to Orlando. So when I went to visit for the first time, that was it. I was just in love with Orlando, in love with Florida. And it just happened to be 2015 when Orlando City were joining MLS, of course. So it was just the perfect storm. Everything just seemed to line up. And I went to my first game, and I you can't see, I have goosebumps just just thinking about it and talking about it, the atmosphere, the incredible stadium, just the uniqueness of seeing a team play in purple. And I just fell in love with it. And we lost the game. I should have known at that point. But
which game was it?
It was against Toronto. And Josie scored. But hey, I absolutely loved it. And I went back a few days later to watch them beat New York City. There was a brilliant Kaká penalty, and I was just hooked. I was just in love with them from that moment. And anyone who's been to a game, you don't need to explain it. You don't need to. Like, how could you come away from either Campanwell Stadium or Exploria Stadium and not be in love with those Lions?
Did Kaká being on the team help persuade you a little?
Do you know, when I was a kid, we always went on holiday to Barcelona. So I wouldn't say he was actually on my list of favorite players because I was a Barca fan.
Right.
But of course, you never turn down the opportunity to see somebody of that level. I mean, a Ballon d'Or winner. I should point out that I am very much in love with the man now. likewise with Nani as well.
Yep.
Obviously, I've seen Nani play at Carrow Road against Norwich when he was at Man United. Phenomenal player, and I'm so pleased that he's a Lion now as well.
Yeah, I used to despise Nani after what he did to my Arsenal. I believe it was the 8-2 game where he had a very, very solid game. So I never imagined I'd be sitting there going, come on, Nani, score a goal. and here I am all these years later watching him play for Orlando City. It's been crazy seeing those stars play for our team. I mean, even Nacharino and Baptista coming over. I mean, these are players that we all saw, maybe not me personally. I saw Nacharino a little bit growing up and Baptista not as much. But seeing them play in purple, I mean, these are big stars. What is it like seeing those stars from the UK, from Europe, coming over to MLS? Is it kind of like it looks like they're just trying to retire? Like, what is it from over there? Because over here, it's like, we're really happy that we get to see these players play live. I never thought I'd be able to say I got to see Kaká play live, and here I am. You guys see them in their prime, and then they come over here. What is it from your viewpoint?
Honestly, 5 years ago, I think maybe the opinions of people in Europe saying that MLS is a retirement league. Do you know what? I don't think it was far off. I don't think that's inaccurate. But I think what the key thing to remember is recently is that has turned on its head. MLS is becoming, known for a lot more than that. It's such an entertaining league. We have a whole podcast banging the drum for it over here in the UK because I believe so many people should be watching it, getting involved with it, because it is so much more than a retirement league. But ultimately, I love seeing those players go over and supporting Norwich, who are rarely in the Premier League and won't be next year. A lot of these players I rarely have anything to do with, so actually it's really nice, for example Nani to come to Orlando, because I never had any reason to follow him before when he was at Man United. And interestingly, speaking last month to Chris Mueller, I put that question to him, like, about playing with these guys, and he told me that he used to play in the park, and as we all did when we're kids, we chose a player to pretend to be when we're playing, and we did all the commentary, and he used to choose Nani. Like, often he would be Nani or Ronaldo, and he just can't believe that every day he goes to work and plays football with him. And I just think that's such a crucial thing with these young players. One good thing about MLS is the way that they do produce and give minutes to homegrown talent, and that homegrown talent is playing with Rooney and Nani and Ibrahimovic. I think it can only be good. It's incredible.
Yeah, these stars are really coming over here and making an impact. I mean, let's just keep with the example of Nani. He comes over and he doesn't look at it as a retirement league. He is giving his heart and soul out every single game. He's not doing what Steven Gerrard kind of did, where he kind of came over and he kind of played his last few years and he didn't really make an impact. Nani is leaving it all out on the pitch. And I think that is that sets an example for the young players to look up to, like Chris Mueller.
Exactly. And I mean, I saw Perlo play live in MLS when I was watching Orlando v NYCFC. Dreadful. Really, really looked so past it. Would never, for example, this is the perfect example of the transition that the MLS has made and the progress. He would never get away with it now. You know, people get on Michael Bradley's back because he just stands there and pings balls. I mean, Perlo couldn't even ping balls. He lost that ability. You know, it was dreadful. You wouldn't get away with it even 3 years down the line. And that shows the progress for me. I think that's really important to stress, is that sometimes when you live and breathe it like you guys do, you know, in your home country, in your home city, home state, it's your league and you see it week in, week out. And it's important to kind of take on board that looking from the outside in, like I have to, the progress is unbelievable. It really is, even in just the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it kind of stinks that it got a little stalled in terms of with the coronavirus, because it looked like this season was going to turn out to be another amazing one. We saw Chicharito come over. We saw a bunch of Mexican League players join, like Pulido. And I mean, teams were really shaping up to have a really close run-in, but then it kind of all got stalled. But we are back. MLS is back. What has it been like watching these games from over in the UK, the MLS is back tournament specifically?
Can I give you an honest answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's the most frustrating thing, seeing clubs' social media teams posting when there's a 9-10 o'clock kickoff, posting about needing coffee. It's 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., 4 a.m. here, and we're soldiering on. I haven't missed a game yet.
Really?
I haven't had any sleep either, but honestly, I love it. I absolutely love it. We missed the Euros. You know, it's supposed to be Euro 2020 final last weekend. We haven't had that. And honestly, this is more than filled a void, because it's knockout football, which we love, and also it's MLS, which we love even more. And for me, I had my reservations. I won't bring the mood down and go into it now, but I did have my reservations, which I stated on our last episode. You know, with just the level of the virus, particularly in Florida, it really concerns me. And the fact that we were still having positive tests whilst teams were in the bubble, etc. But nonetheless, I still wanted it to go ahead deep down. I just didn't know if it was the right thing. But we're a week in. I haven't missed a game. I've absolutely loved it. And honestly, I find it so entertaining. I know maybe the pace has been a little bit down, but not in the Orlando games. We've been at it and I love it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Orlando games. What were your thoughts on the first match? Let's talk about Inter Miami first. And I want to say really quickly, you're allowed to be a fan on this podcast. I'm on a MLS wide based podcast myself. And I understand you have to, you know, attempt to be unbiased and look at both sides of it. You're allowed to be a fan here. So give me your real take on the Inter Miami match.
Okay. Well, first of all, after years and years of all of the, actually, we'll call it banter, stroke abuse, from Inter Miami fans on social media. First of all, it was so satisfying to see the boys just front up, look really strong, go at them, try and play the right way as well, which I really admire, and ultimately just get that sweet result. But actually digging down more into the game, I think in the last 5 years I've become, and actually as a Norwich City fan as well, I've grown accustomed to not getting carried away, not being overconfident. The first two games of the season back in, was it March, didn't fill me with much confidence, but as soon as I spoke to Chris, and he said it's given us so much more time to work on tactics, to just be inspired by what the coach wants to do, I just immediately, you can see that. I expected it to take a few more games for me to go, oh yeah, do you know what, maybe he's right. But no, straight away you can see that we look like a totally different side. And the Orlando City UK guys. I know they all listen to your podcast as well. So shout out to those guys. We're all up. We're all messaging each other at stupid o'clock in the morning. And when we had the lead in both games, none of us expected us to keep the lead. And I think that just says so much. We all expect that usual Orlando approach of, oh, we might be actually good here. Oh, no, we're throwing it away. And it was that anticipation. You almost just expect it. But it looks like we're able to grind out results. And that, for me, is more important than digging down into tactics, and which I'm happy to do. But I think the key takeaway from it is just so simple. I think it's the fact that we can grind out these results. And we've never been able to do that before. I've never seen Orlando do that before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're not talking about the NYCFC match just quite yet, but that was the opening statement on the last podcast for me. There's your difference between Breja and O'Connor, and really just the other managers. I think you bring up a good point that we've never been able to do that. It's always been, cardiac cats. We come in the last second, or we give it away in the last second. Chicago last year, Toronto last year, Minnesota last year, Seattle last year. You can just go down the list. There are
the list goes
so
on.
Many. Yeah, it's really disappointing. But I think you're right. I just think it's so massive that we can grind out results as we did in the Inter Miami match. How big do you think that match was mentally to the fans, to the team, to the club? Not only in terms of short term, maybe building momentum, but we have had the monkey on our back with Atlanta not being able to beat them in 8 tries. If we lose or draw this game, to me, that's another monkey on our back saying, why can't you guys win big games against your rivals? Why can't you beat a rival? And then the next time we go against Miami, that's the talk. And if we don't come out of that one with a result, it starts another one. How big was actually getting the win in this match to the club?
Exactly. I mean, there's two levels to it. The first is in this MLS's back tournament level, it's big because it was the first game. All eyes were on Orlando and Miami for that reason. It's much talked about, but this new format, you know, it's never been seen before. So actually, regardless of who it was against, it was already crucial for the team going forward because it's playing in this new format, you know, this knockout, almost playoff kind of vibe, you know, lose a game and you're almost home. So I think that was key in terms of this particular era where the future is really uncertain. You know, is there going to be another one of these tournaments? We don't know. Getting that win, just settling down, you know, I think that was probably more important than people have sort of estimated, because we've seen if teams lose one, they lose another. Atlanta. And secondly, I think the key is that rivalry, like you said, with just it snowballs, it becomes a thing. It's not just in MLS, it works the same over here as well. Luckily, I'm on the right side of it, but my team, Norwich City, have not lost to their rivals, Ipswich Town, in, I mean, you're looking over 10 years, and there's been many attempts in that time. And it becomes a thing. You know, Atlanta, unfortunately for us, has become a thing, and it gets more and more frustrating every single time. But there will only ever be one first match between Orlando and Inter Miami, and Florida was turned purple.
Now, were there any particular players who impressed you and or disappointed you? I know it's a while ago, the Inter Miami match. You've already seen so many matches, but think back to it. And was there anybody who stood out and anybody who possibly stood out in the negative light?
To be honest with you, I have watched it again. I have dug down a little bit deeper into particular areas. And unfortunately, it's watching it back a second time didn't particularly help. You don't need to be an expert to pick out the good and the bad. We'll start with the good, and you know, it's Chris Mueller. It's the obvious choice, but unfortunately it is the choice. The guy just screams energy, passion, the closing down, the pressing constantly, putting defenses under pressure, putting the left back under pressure, sometimes getting him behind, always being an option. just looking hungry. I mean, I imagine a team of Chris Mueller's incredible. You know, I know it's the obvious choice, but I don't think national media have really picked up on him in the past. I think because there's only one game being played at a time and everyone's watching it, I think it's the first time that they've really sat up and gone, wow, this kid's good. And I haven't seen him do much different in these last couple of games to what he's done last season. You know, he's always been a fan favorite for exactly everything I've just listed. You know, that hunger, that desire, the energy. He's always been able to finish. Like, let's take nothing away from the kid. But I think now everyone's starting to sit up and take, you know, pay attention, because he really offered Orlando so much going forward, but so much, you know, defending from attacking, just pressing, making the defense really, really work. And like I say, a real obvious choice, but even when you dig down into specifics, every time it's Chris who's making the difference.
Yeah, his first action in the NYCFC match is what sticks out in my head. He gets the ball passed into him, and he's instantly trying to turn with it. And it doesn't quite come off for him. I believe he loses it. But the first time the ball comes to him, he's turning and attempting to go to goal. And that's something that we've all loved, his directness. And I know some people criticize him for it. Sometimes he needs to slow down. I think we're seeing now where Pareja comes in, because Chris is starting to slow down a bit, but he's also knowing when to turn up the heat.
Exactly. I think there has to be a balance. But for me, as a fan, maybe not as a coach, but as a fan, I'm happy that 90% of the time my wingers are going to get the ball and try and drive forward. Even if they get tackled and you win a throw in 4 yards down the line, you know, you're gaining yardage and you're getting forward. And that's something that we've been really, really poor at in the past, is getting caught on the counter. I mean, I only have to say the words Wayne Rooney to you. You know, that is the perfect example. And it's not just those Rooney goals. It's I could give you 20 other examples as well. You know, you have to be keeping the ball up your end of the field, especially when the game is being played at a high tempo. It's fine to play out from the back. I love that we're trying to do that. I'm a massive, massive fan of that. I love it. If you've got the keeper to be able to do it, which we have now. But you know, in terms of our wingers and even our wing backs, if you look at Juan, getting forward, attacking, love to see that as a fan, playing the right way, trying to attack 24/7. Teams can't cope with it. You know, New York couldn't cope with it. Miami certainly couldn't cope with it. And do you know what? I look at Atlanta today. There's no way they would have coped with it. It's just all out attack and that different mentality that he brings. You touched on the coach sort of changing his mentality a little bit, trying to slow it down. Let's not forget, James O'Connor wouldn't have even picked that 11. He'd have been resting players because they needed a break. Mm-hmm. You know, it's everything about this Orlando side. I know we're only a couple of games in, but it just looks so encouraging. It's the fact that we set out to go and do what we did when the team is only on paper. We set out to go and attack before the whistle was even blown. And I love that. I love to see that.
All right. Now let's quickly go into the disappointed player really quickly.
I mean, you could probably guess. Do you know, it genuinely pains me to say it. It really does. It really, really pains me to say it. But I don't know what is going on with Dom Dwyer. Look, he came from the Norwich City Academy. He came from England. You know, he lived in Norwich. I love him to bits, and I love everything he's done for Orlando. And it feels so weird to say this, but I think I'm just done. Like, I don't know what's happened from SKC to now. And I don't get, I'm all for letting the defender know you're there, putting the pressure on. The pressing, which I'm talking about from Chris Mueller, perfect. Dwyer presses as well, but then he has to stick an elbow in or stick a knee in, or he's on the floor, and I've got no patience for it. I really haven't. There's such a fine line between putting yourself around, giving 110% for your club, dying for your club. I'm all for that, but I don't know. I just want an attacker who can finish. There's no need for all that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit later, but let's talk about it now. All signs seem to be pointing for Leo Ramos, the player from Club Leon over in Mexico, to be joining us. I mean, he started following Orlando City. The report from the reporter down in Mexico says that he's joining on loan. And if we're being honest, our front office loves loans. Juan was a loan last season. We have Perea, Carlos, and I believe Schlegel's on loan as well. All signs point to him being that new number nine.
Yeah, you mentioned the loan thing. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think if you're in the Championship and you can get a decent, experienced Premier League player on loan, great. In terms of loans in general, I'm not a huge fan. However, what I will say is Orlando's recruitment, maybe not recently, but certainly in the past, 100% in the past, has been poor at times, to say the least. And so sometimes just having, you know, Juan turned out to be an incredible, what a signing, what a guy. But it could have been the opposite and we would have been able to just let him go and it wouldn't have been a drama. I think it's a really nice get out clause in MLS, because sometimes you do sign these players and you just think, what are we doing? And they're stuck on a contract, they're eating into your salary cap. It's really nice to see them going for a player that maybe they didn't want to, you know, at his age, maybe they didn't want to go and pay silly money for, or pay anything for, or get on a long-term contract. But by getting him in on loan, you know, presumably with an option to purchase if we'd like to, is very sensible, especially during the season. If we can just have him till the end of the season and make a decision, great. But in terms of him adding to our attack, it seems weird to say. If you look at Dom Dwyer at Sporting Kansas City, you look at Tesha Akindele at FC Dallas, and you say, right, both those guys are going to go to Orlando, but you're going to need goals still, so you're going to have to bring someone in on loan. That seems weird for me. Like, something's not quite right.
I will say Akindele has impressed these last two games for me.
Yeah, no, totally. Totally agree. But for me, you know, he didn't get the start ahead of Dwyer in the last game, which surprised me. But for me, I think it's disappointing to have Dwyer and Akindele and between them to still be wanting goals. I have no bad word to say about Akindele, but as a duo, that should be enough, especially if you only play one up top at a time. There's no need for us, you know, especially with other options that we have on the bench that can play in that position if required. There's no need, really, in theory, for us to need to go and get somebody like that. But the situation we're in, you know, our goals are coming from elsewhere. They're coming from the likes of Mueller on the wing. And so I'm all for it. I'm happy to go ahead with the loan and to see how it gets on and see if we can integrate him into the side. But for me, it's just really sad, because on paper, the Dwyer homecoming should have just been so perfect. And for me, when you look at that all-time Orlando City goal scoring charts and you see Dwyer top, for someone who's only watched Orlando since 2015, can you imagine how confusing that is for me to see? I don't understand where those goals came from.
Yeah, for me, Leo Ramos, if the transfer does go through, I think that's the writing on the wall for Dom Dwyer. But let's move on to the NYCFC match. Another impressive victory. We win 3-1. And so I'm going to pick, I had you pick the players who impressed you and disappointed you. So for me, I'm going to pick the one who impressed me first, and that was Galese. I mean, what a performance from the goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, when Galese joined Orlando in the preseason, I was working for a company who are heavily involved in football statistics, and I did extensive work on every team in the East, but obviously I really enjoyed my work on Orlando City. And looking into his abilities, watching game footage back, extensive game footage back of him, I was extremely, extremely impressed. I said on the podcast at the time, and Henry just thought, yeah, Orlando, same old story. Elliot gets excited about a signing, and then it turns out to be a disaster, and then we finish bottom. I know that's the routine, but for me, this is different. And it's, yes, he made incredible saves. He kept us in that game the other day. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. But I mentioned it earlier. It's our determination to now try and play out of the back a little bit instead of just launching the ball forward all the time. Because ultimately, not to bash on Dwyer again, but ultimately when we go long ball, it's Dwyer going up for a header and, you know, he's either on the floor or he's getting fouled or he's fouling somebody else. It doesn't seem to work. So I really like the way that we played out of the back. And okay, it didn't come from the keeper, but our goal did come from playing out of the back. We were deep into our half, into that far corner. And all of a sudden, within a few seconds, Chris Mueller's tapping it home. And I just think that having Kalese brings a whole new dimension to the way that we play, not just his ability in between the sticks, but just being able to pick that first pass, get the game moving quickly. And he's always an option. I saw Robin turn around and use him as an option a lot, and I'm okay with that. I don't mind going backwards to go forwards. A lot of fans maybe can't see it and they get frustrated. But especially when you're winning a game, it's so key to have somebody who's just so comfortable on the ball.
Yeah, and I think also the other thing with him is the confidence from our defenders in him. Growing up, I was always told by my coaches that it's always very, and I'm not a goalkeeper, but it's always very important to have, when you're a defender, to have confidence in your goalkeeper. So if you do make a mistake, the goalkeeper is there to back you up. And I think this was the first game we saw that our center backs were able to have confidence in Galese because he did save us.
Completely. And not just simple saves either. I mean, the double save is incredible. It really is. And there's not many goalkeepers in MLS that would be doing that. I could maybe name you three or four, but it really does put us in that top tier, and it can make a difference. If we're losing games by one goal last season, you know, that can make all the difference. Those points, ultimately, we had a really disappointing season. Well, all of them have been disappointing, but yeah. We really, going into that Chicago Fire game at the end of last season, we were still in with a shout, you know, and it was really disappointing to realistically not really miss out by much despite having a poor season. Nobody seemed to want that last spot in the playoffs, and those saves, those double saves, they're gonna pick you up two or three points at least. And you know, if it means we cling on to a game like we did the other night, don't forget these games count towards the regular season as well. You know, that's already 2 points, maybe three, that he's earned us, you know, in this tournament alone.
Yep, I said the same thing on the podcast. We're actually in second place right now in the East. Can you fathom that? We're in second.
It's quite hard to take in, isn't it? I did tweet saying, this tweet won't age well, but we're currently top of the East.
Right. Now, a player that seems to have disappointed in the first two matches for some fans, and I don't know if it's just because of the Inter-Miami match or what, but he took some stick in the NYCFC match too, was Antonio Carlos, I feel. A lot of people weren't happy with his performances. What were your thoughts on the loney center back?
Yeah, I think particularly in the Miami game, a little bit disappointing. I think also when you're used to seeing someone like Robin Jansen, who is just a brick wall, he made a couple of errors actually the other day, but it was very unlike him. And he certainly atoned for the mistakes very, very quickly. You know, it takes somebody very good to look as good as him. I have to admit, I was a little bit disappointed, and that was echoed in by the members of Orlando City UK as well. We were all chatting during the game, both games. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, but remember, a lot of people criticised Sané. I didn't mind Sané. I didn't mind him going as long as we brought in somebody you know, of a very good level. I don't believe we've replaced him. I really don't.
Yeah, I think that's probably why a lot of people are looking to see Schlegel move in there. And I feel like he's more comfortable on the left-hand side, in my opinion. We've seen him predominantly on the left. He played left in the three against Colorado. And then in the preseason game, I believe he even played left back, or maybe left in a three-back system again. But I mean, yeah, people seem to be really wanting Schlegel in over Carlos to see if we maybe got the Sané replacement in Schlegel.
Yeah, if I had to choose a weak area of the team, it would be the centre back, not Robin, but it would be that other centre back spot. And of course, even once you filled it, you still need people just as good on the bench. You still need depth, and I don't believe we have it. I think we've got some really nice options, especially in midfield. I mean, it's crazy sometimes when you look at the bench. It would be lovely to be able to pick a few more players. I mean, Mendes not getting the start, for example. We've so many options in the middle of the field and on the wings, but I really believe that centre back spot could prove to be an issue. Maybe further down the line, we could look back and go, yeah, we didn't recruit too well there.
All right, now let's move on to the Philadelphia match coming up on Monday, I believe it is. Today is Thursday, the 16th, and Monday, the 20th. Yeah, the 20th is our last game. I don't know about you. I'm pretty nervous about this match. I think Philadelphia were one of those teams going into it, when you're looking on the outside, that they're going to be well set up. They have this basically the same players. They brought in a couple players over the transfer window. They have the same coach. They look sturdy in defense, potent in attack. And it's turned out to be true. They won their first two games just like we did. I'm nervous for this game. What about you?
Yeah, I know Philadelphia very well. Covered them alongside Orlando over the last couple of years for football company that I worked for. I know them inside out, and I really like the roster. I can't deny, I really like the roster. I like the way the club go about things, giving young players a chance. They've got so much more coming through in their youth ranks than Orlando have, and I hope that changes, because I love to see youth coming through. And you know, it's a very good option when there is, you know, salary caps and only a few DP slots. It's crucial to be bringing through those homegrowns. They've done that very, very well, and they always give them a chance. But it's not a glamorous roster. There's no glamour to it. They're just good, and I really like that. I think teams often underestimate them. Fans certainly underestimate them, because maybe they don't watch many Philly games until their team plays them. But this is a very, very good side. And there's two ways to approach this game. You can look at it as, well, we've qualified, so it doesn't matter. Or you can look at it as, these could be our rivals if we want to be a serious contender in the East this year. And we need these 3/6, you know, it's a 6-pointer already. they would be a huge, huge 3 points if we were to be able to get them. But Philadelphia is probably one of the toughest games we could have going into this next week.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. When the groups first came out, I was very happy that we missed out on having to play them. And then, of course, Dallas and Nashville had to be sent home due to coronavirus issues. And now we're forced to play them. And it's kind of like, oh, man, we're through. But I really want, I mean, if we were to get 9 points out of these three matches, go a full 100%, that would be insane. And I will say, I do have faith in Pereja to do it, but this is definitely the hardest match of the group stage.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, we know Jim Curtin, we know how he'll set up. He loves that diamond. It works really well for him. He can interchange players from the bench. He's got so many options that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of, but they can come in and they can do a job. They've been doing it for Bethlehem Steel, their B team, if you like, their USL team. And they play with the same diamond, and the players are brought up to play that way, and they know exactly what's expected of them the moment they're called up for that first team training session. They know exactly how Jim wants them to play. So these guys are really, really well drilled. And ultimately, we've seen a lot more of Jim Curtin's Philadelphia than we've seen of Oscar's Orlando. So it's very difficult to really call this one. Obviously, we've looked very good in the first two games, but Philadelphia will be a whole different ball game.
Yep. Now, what have your overall thoughts been on Oscar Pereja? We kind of touched on him a little bit earlier, but give me your full rundown on our new coach.
Well, first of all, having seen from the outside in what he's done with FC Dallas, I think, as I just touched on, it's so important to have the youth coming through. And I love that he invested so much time away from the first team when he was at Dallas, you know, going to watch the youth teams play, even taking training sessions with the youth team. You know, that's something that we've been very, very bad at Orlando is even just having that complex now for the players to go and use. I mean, is a step forward. It shows how behind we were in that aspect. But first of all, that's the key thing for me off the field, is the fact that he wants to promote the youth. He wants to work with the youth and bring them through. And I expect OCB to be much less of an embarrassment than they've been in the last few years. But that's a separate story. But in terms of on the field, I mean, I keep referencing my chat with Chris Mueller, but it's an important point. He just said he just feels like a different player. He feels like he has the coach's 100% trust. He feels like there's a belief that they can really go and do something. And since Adrian Heath, I've not had any faith in a coach that we've had. I've not had that ultimate, do you know what, it's going to be fine because this guy knows what he's doing. I haven't felt that until Oscar took charge. And I know we're only a few games in, but I would feel the same if we'd have lost these two MLS's back tournament games. I think it's overall, you know, he has experience and you know that he knows what he's doing. And I like that he wants to attack. I like that he wants to play the right way. We've touched on playing out of the back. I really like everything that all the signs are there for me so far. And that key thing, as I mentioned earlier, is just grinding out those results, making the right substitutions at the right time.
Yeah, you can see that he's self-aware. You can see that he's saying, oh, this isn't working. I need to switch this up. We saw it in both the Inter-Miami match, where, in my opinion, we started off pretty slow, and then we started high-pressing, and it worked brilliantly, and we weren't able to get the goal in the first half, but things changed. He kept moving things around. He kept tinkering, and we can't come out on top with the kind of lucky goal at the end of the game. And then NYCFC, he starts us off perfectly. He overloads them with the high press. I believe it was a man-to-man high press at some points, and we get the two goals really quickly. Mueller with that absolute banger off of the Moutinho free kick, and then the great build-up play out of the back. I mean, you can see Oscar Pereja's imprint on this team just a couple months after joining. He joined in, what, December? So we're 7 months down the line. He's really making an impact already.
Of course, it's that it feels like a different team, and it sounds like a silly thing to say, and it's not a very in-depth way of looking at it for someone who loves to really dig down into tactics and formations as much as me. But actually, it's the simple things. It's the respect of the players. It's the confidence. We look like a different team, and we had to, because unfortunately in the last 4 or 5 years it's just been so disappointing. It's been the same old story, and I really feel like that could change. I genuinely, this really could come back to haunt me, but I really feel like that could change with this appointment.
Well, that's the thing, right? It could come back to haunt us, but you look at Oscar Pereja's history in the MLS, and you just, I'm going to equate it to over what we're doing at Arsenal right now. We just brought in Mikel Arteta, and we're having some bumps in the road. We just lost to Tottenham. We just beat Liverpool so unfairly. And just, you can feel that this is the right hire for Arsenal. You can feel it around the club. The fans can feel it. It's just a feeling. You can't really put your tongue on it. Even though we haven't had the best results still. I mean, we lost to Brighton, got smacked by Manchester City, but we're going in the right direction. We can just feel it. It's the same thing here at Orlando City. I'm getting tingles down my back. I mean, Oscar Pereja is doing everything you need to do to take the right steps in the right direction. And I just could not be happier with him as our as my coach right now, as the coach of Orlando City. And I'm also confident in the front office. I think they're kind of the unsung heroes here. Everybody criticized them. Not everybody, but a lot of people criticized them for firing James O'Connor, not giving him another chance. But again, I think this was the right move to bring in Oscar Pereja behind him.
I mean, the James O'Connor situation is you're worlds apart. I can't even compare the two. I may be being harsh, but I had a really interesting chat. I went for a coffee with James O'Connor's agent a couple of months ago, and I had a really good chat with him. And I was brutally honest. And, you know, he didn't like what he heard, but I was brutally honest. It wasn't good enough. He was a great player for Orlando City. And I believe that it should always be remembered, no matter, you know, what happens when, you know, Frank Lampard's going to leave Chelsea one day. It might be in 2 months and it might be in 2 years, but he's going to leave Chelsea one day and he will be fired. And it will be because he's not done a good job. And ultimately, that doesn't change anything he did for Chelsea. It's the reality of becoming a coach. It doesn't last long. And, you know, as soon as it starts to go bad, people ask questions. What I was confused about was, maybe you can help me with this, from a UK perspective, one thing that we always mention, the Orlando City UK fans, one thing we always mention is when the stadium's half empty because we've lost the last two games and people are tweeting saying, oh, I'm cancelling my season ticket. We don't understand that. We literally can't get our head around that, because we will just be there, rain or shine. You know, it's not all glory. Someone always has to lose. And unfortunately, it's always Orlando so far. But then on the flip side of that, nobody wanted James O'Connor to be sacked. And I didn't understand it, because they wanted change, but they didn't want to change the coach. And for me, there was so much wrong with the club and the way that James was going about things, the way he was picking teams, so much rotation, unnecessary rotation, when we'd had 10 days between games and we rested Nani, and someone says, oh, is he injured? No. Well, then play it. You know, you play your strongest team. And we didn't set out to win matches. Before the game had kicked off, we were all saying, well, how is this team going to go and win that game? You know, random changes of goalkeeper. And, you know, it was just all over the shop. And I think it's just worlds apart from Oscar. I trust him. I feel like I trust him 100%. Whereas I was always questioning whether James was doing the right thing, because he was unproven. Now, if we'd have gone on to win 10 games instead of losing however many we did in a row, that trust would have grown, and I wouldn't have had a problem. But I felt like I was always skeptical, and no one ever changed my mind, because we were just always poor. So Oscar feels like a new era. I hope the front office back him even more, and I hope they continue to scout well and to bring in good players to help him. And I'm sure he'll be very involved in that, as he likes to be. I hope he is. But ultimately, I want him to be given time. James didn't earn time. It has to be earned. Oscar already has respect. He commands respect because of what he's done, what he's achieved, and the way that he's started his career at Orlando. And I really, really hope he's given time. And if it doesn't happen this year, I would be really, really frustrated if we took a step back and fired him and tried to find someone else. I really, really want us to stick with him, give him time, give him the roster that he deserves, and let him have a go at it.
Yeah, I think that's very well said there, Elliot. I do want to touch on your kind of question that you said midway through that about the difference between over here, over there in the UK and over here in America on the fans.
Yeah.
In the UK, would you say that when you are going to the ground, when you are spending your money on a ticket, you see that as you're giving your money to the club and you're supporting the club because you know that money will go into the operations of it, correct?
I mean, I don't think, for me, I don't think it would matter. I think I'm in love with that club, and I pay what I have to pay to go and watch it. Ultimately, clubs operate differently. Sometimes that money is completely wasted. Sometimes you never see it, see it go to good use. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah, ultimately, I'd like it to be going to the club. But if it was twice as much, I'd still be there. It's my first love.
I think that's part of it. I think it is pretty expensive to go to a game here. You know, in terms of concessions, really. I mean, beers can be upwards of $12, $13 sometimes, hot dogs and food and all that. It's a pretty costly event. But I don't think fans in America, and this can kind of go across all sports, see it as I am supporting the club with my money and they are putting a team out there and I'm going to go support the team and shout for whatever. I think they see it more as an entertainment thing, kind of like when you go to the theater to watch a show. I'm going to the game to watch the game. I want to see us win. And if we don't win, why would I waste my money watching our team lose? To me, that's what I think is the main thing. And I've talked to my co-host Daniel about it, as he grew up in the UK, and he tends to agree with that. He thinks it's deeper rooted than that. But at this moment in time, that's what I think it is. I think when fans are saying I'm canceling my season ticket, it's because they don't want to give the money anymore because they don't want to see us lose. They don't want to waste their money. To them, it's a waste of money to go to a game and watch us lose. When to me, yeah, it sucks that we lost, but I still got to watch my team play. I still got to go to the environment. To me, it's not a waste of money.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes, well, the majority of the time, actually, going to watch Norwich City, as you can imagine, is not enjoyable. Until recently, correct, it has not been enjoyable. In the grand scheme of things, in the UK, they're actually a very good side. If you think how many teams are actually below them in the ladder. But, you know, I've seen them be bottom of League One, losing 7-0, 7-1 to Colchester. But I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because, MLS, I was 5 when MLS started, you know, and I was in my 20s when Orlando City joined MLS. So maybe it's not because it's not been from birth, but I was just brought up that you support Norwich City till the day you die. And no matter how painful it is, you know, you just religiously go along and get your heart broken. And I think maybe that's also the thing, is that I've been going since I was a kid and I've gone every single week. And I think maybe that's another reason, is that it's still fairly new in America. But I know for a fact that when people in the UK go, oh, I'll give MLS a try, and they tune in and half the stadium's empty, immediately it's like, oh, well, I can't take this seriously. You know, that's the brutal, if you want my honest opinion, that's the brutal honesty. And if I lived in Orlando, I mean, if I lived in Orlando, I would be there, you know, every single week, rain or shine, no matter what happened. And that is the feeling of the Orlando City UK group as well. When we see the stadium empty, it breaks our heart, because we would give anything to be there. You know, we're all up at 3 a.m. watching it and just wishing that we could be there. And just, it's pure jealousy. I hate that people can just go to Exploria, you know, and go and just pop to a game. And I hate that. It kills me because I love it. And it's heartbreaking to see, you know, half the stadium empty sometimes. But I do understand, it's just very different, and I'm okay with that. But that's why you can't compare the two leagues at the minute, because there's so many things like that that are just so different.
Yep, I do think it's a very interesting topic that I hope sparks some conversation among some fans that do listen. But I think that's a good place to leave it. Do you wanna give your answer for the game with the changing name?
Is it Darren Huckabee?
It is Darren Huckabee. Some would call him a Norwich City legend, correct?
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, I figured I'd pick a Norwich fan or a big Norwich player for you since you are a Norwich fan. Started his career at Lincoln City, went to Newcastle United, played at Coventry, Leeds, Manchester City before they were good, Norwich City, and then finished his career at the San Jose Earthquakes. Elliot, do you want to quickly plug the MLS UK show one more time?
Yeah, sure. If you're not sick of me already, myself and Henry look at the whole league. Henry's an Atlanta fan, so it might be interesting to tune into the next episode. but we are at MLS UK Show on Twitter and Instagram, and you can find the podcast on all of the podcast sites.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me, Elliot.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, guys, and with that, don't forget to leave a 5-star review. Do the survey linked in the description. And as always, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one.
Quickly here, Nani gets in behind. Here's Nani with a chip. It's 1-1.